Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 488 of the JV Club with my incredible guest, Lulu Miller. If you are a podcast listener, and my friend, if you're listening to this, I must tell you, you are. You probably already know Lulu from, she's a familiar voice on podcasts like Radiolab, like Invisibilia, and we talk at length about her new project, which is a Radiolab. Listen, it's kind of for kids, but it's for everybody, and you should listen to it. We'll talk more about it on the podcast. I also just want to give a quick shout out to a past guest, Darcy Rose Burns. Wanted to make sure everybody knows that she is Harper in Big Shot and singing the voice of Princess Amber in Sophia the First. These are both shows on Disney Plus, and they are streaming October 12th. Check those out and support Darcy. And now I will leave you to enjoy this conversation with the luminous Lulu Miller. Well, this is very cool for me. I have been a fan of yours for quite some time. I just feel like, you know, it's weird when you are a person who also has stuff in the public eye, because you can take the I bet we'd be friends thing and possibly parlay it into that being true.
Yeah.
But it could also just go the way of like, no, but like this person has millions of fans and like, I'm also still just a person who listens to their stuff and thinks that like we all think that, you know?
Oh, same. So. I mean, vice versa. Or just you're like, oh, that's curated, edited you. And then real you is.
Yeah.
Then I'm very awkward. And then you'd be like, actually. So let's keep it back to the podcast you.
Let me give you the full polished self.
This isn't wine, yeah. By the way. This is water. I just feel like this has been my water bottle for so long. And sometimes in like official board meetings, I'm always like, I got to change it up.
Swigging. But. Let me show you what I use. These, I cannot tell you how old this bottle that I pulled the label off of that was an apple cider vinegar drink that I was like, these bottles are great. They're a great size. I don't want to just get rid of them. I get recycling, but I could use these because I'm also very messy and I tend to spill. So knowing that I can have this little guy and then if it's hot and my water sweats, I had to make a koozie out of an old raccoon sock.
I love.
So if that doesn't,
yeah, that's
right. I mean,
well, cheers
to us. Okay, so let's get back to you and how great you are. You've been a part of first. I had no idea that you wrote to Radiolab as a college student and like worked your way up through to being a co-host. I remember your name being in the production credits for many years, it seemed.
Yeah.
But I certainly didn't know. I don't think I knew if you guys ever talked about it on Radiolab proper, I just have forgotten because there have been so many episodes. But
yeah,
that's such a charming factoid. Will you tell me a little more about it?
Yeah, I was like fresh out of college, and I was living in New York City. I had gone there to follow a boy. Didn't really like have New York dreams, but was like, he's there. And we were dating, and I wanted to write a novel. I wanted to write fiction. And so I was working for a woodworker because I'd done a lot of sculpture in college. And I'd never thought of myself as a journalist. Like when my parents loved NPR growing up, and I'd be like, ugh. Like, I hate it. Can you turn on GMA 94.5? Like, why are they all talking like out of their noses? This doesn't sound like real humans. Whatever. Yeah. And also journalism requires a lot of bothering and asking of impersonal questions. And I had like a shy peacemakery, like it was not what I thought
totally
I'd be.
Totally get it.
But I wanted to actually, and because of that, because of the kind of shyness or like awkwardness in the world, my dream was always to like reside in fictional worlds and like just whatever, right? So I was doing the day job, trying to write, but not because I was tired and whatever. And then I heard radio again and again and again, day after day. And I started noticing, wait, I feel super informed. I'm laughing really hard. I'm like feeling.
Yeah.
And I just was like, wait, I like this audio thing a lot. It's like, it doesn't have the weird visual judgments, but I'm feeling like I can connect and I like imagining and all that. So I fell in love with it. I heard Radiolab before it was a national show, it was just being produced. And I didn't have any training, and I went onto their website and, you know, like I downloaded a bunch and listened to them. And I saw it appeared all these like really talented humans. And then so then I just wrote to them and I was like, you don't need me, but sometimes like you're full of good chefs, but sometimes you need an ingredient you don't know you need. And I was like, let me be your cilantro. I can be your cilantro. And so then they were like, yeah. And at that point, internship was unpaid. They were like, you can volunteer. So I volunteered for a day a week for about a year. And then, yeah, kind of learned my way into doing all the stuff that helps make the ship run. And then
sure.
When they got a little bit of a budget to hire a producer, I remember being very nervous for my job interview. And then I was like, okay, to deal with this nerves, I'll like make two kinds of salsa. So I like got up really early and made salsa with cilantro and made salsa
yes!
without cilantro. And then I was like, I came in with two bowls and chips and I was like, which one's better?
And then,
but they basically, I think they hired me because I could make salsa and because I could do all the stuff that made the ship run and like
sure.
all this boring stuff over very talented reporters and producers. And then once I was in there every day, I kind of learned story by story. And I just,
yeah.
I didn't know it, but I just loved audio editing. I loved piecing to whether it was my story. You know, I didn't start reporting till a few years into it, but like, I just loved that journey of going out into the world, collecting some reality, some tape,
yeah.
some real exchanges, whether it's an interview or someone, you know, driving and like being awkward as they say hi to someone, just catching reality.
Yeah.
And then sitting in your little cave and like just mining out the gems and thinking about how to string them together and give them back to someone. And I don't know. I think that is like the most fun thing in the world.
I love everything you're saying. I feel like if you'd wanted to continue the comparison to salsa, you could have said, again, you're out picking the ingredients from the world.
Yeah, there we go.
And because that really is an element of each podcast of yours that I have listened to and been a fan of, is there is a sense of both roughness and very produced in a way that is very special and very unique. I mean, if you're a person who kind of came into podcasts listening to things like This American Life and Radiolab, you understand that it feels to me, and I could be totally wrong about this, but just based on even what you're saying, there is that feeling of like, we want this to be a beautiful oral experience, but we don't want you to ever forget that we're human beings, we're people, we're accessible, we are emotional, we goof around, we mess up, our audio doesn't work sometimes, like all of
yeah.
those things
yeah.
that in other podcasts or in other radio productions where they're like, it's all audio, so everything matters, that it would be too slick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So having like, and having Jad's love of music and like really letting things breathe, all of that stuff, that gave birth to so many other podcasts that were inspired by Radiolab.
Oh,
I've experienced and am sure.
Yeah, totally, totally. I love that. It's that interplay is so fun. It's like the scaffolding and your intention for the piece, which feels muscular and steel and kind of rigid.
Yeah.
And then there's just reality and then kind of like, literally just busting up that scaffolding and it's
right.
just so fun to play with like, yeah, how like, I don't want to waste people's time. There's so much out there. So you want it to move at a good clip, but then
right.
to also kind of gift someone with, if you've delivered them to a moment where like the suspense or whatever, the storytelling has cleared their brain of worries and BS. I don't know if this is like a swear type of podcast, but anyway, and then
you're fine.
It's okay. But to like gift someone with a moment of silence in a temporarily clear brain. Like I love that as a listener. So that's something I want anyway, but yeah, the interplay, it's very fun. It's very fun.
I love it. I love it. And you just reminded me when you said that moment of silence and kind of just being with yourself, instead of my brain emptying out, it reminded me that I also will be forever grateful to Radiolab for introducing me to Zoe Keating, who
yes.
I have now had the pleasure of doing some shows with consider a pal and sort of go, oh, right. This is also what's so wonderful about doing things like radio and podcasts and, you know, being out in the world in other ways. But the idea of different people with different artistic the ways that in which they express their creativeness and their art.
Yeah.
It's just like a nonstop fangirl moment. Like all I do is just appreciate how special other people are. And that is such food for, you know, that's some real salsa for the soul right there.
Yeah, salsa for the soul. Yeah. And I love Zoe Keating, who does the looping cello. Like I feel like she and Jad, I don't actually know this, but I feel like she and Jad were both these humans who worked in like analog mediums.
Yeah.
Radio used to be that, you know, like the tape and then the cello, this like breathy bodily thing.
Yes.
And then they both, like, the moment they hit digital technology and instead of just like just doing some synth like cold on cold, they do that mix of like electroacoustic, like bringing
warmth
and then using digital to distort it. And they feel like these kindred spirits who caught the wave like 5 years before anyone else, because for some reason they were geeks ahead of time.
Completely agree.
And then just like evolved their forms. And like, she's amazing. She is so, I love her work.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Your approach to joining the team is so charming and wonderful. And kind of, again, it's that sort of like, I'm taking the time and effort to make this, like, sort of push forward on this and take this chance, but I'm also being a little folksy, which again, I love.
Yeah.
So
I'm like using metaphor to like try to make my case that I'm valuable, even if I'm not.
But it's great. It's great. So my question is like, is that something that, you know, now looking back at that and looking back at, for example, your teenage life, did you approach other things that way? Like, even if you weren't as self-aware then, was it like, interesting, actually, I guess I kind of did come at things in a way that sort of made them like less intimidating by however I, you know, like I can only come at this in an intimidating way. So if maybe I will bring it to me as an unintimidating thing, even if like at a distance, it looks like this giant behemoth thing that I have to get to somehow, you know?
That's such an interesting question. I almost like where I'm going immediately is like, now I think a lot about like the value of ceremony. Like, okay, here's where I went in my head. Was
right. I'm
childhood kind of ending at the moment I stopped making mud pies. Mm-hmm. So like mud pies, super fun, or like potions. I remember having friends over and like, we were not old enough to boil water, but like we were boiling water. And then we're like, let's just add like dandelions and like, and this kind of like super, or like I remember smoking incense, like,
oh yeah,
just like whatever, like a little bit witchy, mischievous, playing with the world, trying to transmute.
Absolutely.
Like, tame.
Also, there's some great books out there, like some YA books that really encourage that and like encourage the analog version of that.
And that's I think, great. Again, for like growing up, you know, very aggressively without religion, but clearly having some kind of human desire for spirituality or ceremony. I think like, I don't know why I'm connecting these, but the salsa and the mud pie, like the making, the using of your world to mark a moment or to kind of, you know, whatever. I feel like maybe it was around, but I think in a weird way, part of my teen years and the like private sadness that went with it, like I think I tried to publicly look fun and happy, but just like super struggling. I think it was like losing touch with that kind of ceremony and playing with the world, that kind of stuff where it was like, oh, there's no magic. There's no point. I'm trying to be cool with like a lot of, there were amazing people in my teenage years, but like I think I was overwhelmed by like the preppy lame people or whatever. And so I think there were actually during those years was a loss of access to that stuff, which just does bring joy. And then I think part of getting older has been reconnecting with it even before I had kids, but like, okay, I'm at this MFA party where everyone's a little stodgy and I'm gonna bring my face paints and like I'll be the kid in the corner offering face paints. And then at a certain point, like the poet laureate Rita Dove came over and I like face painted cherries on her face. And then you'd have these intimate moments to talk. And maybe that's childish and maybe I'm like naive and twee and intolerable. But I also think like sometimes you need to hike up the mountain and burn the like part, you know, the part of a t-shirt of a person you need to get over. Like I think ceremony matters. And in a weird way, I think, I lost connection with that kind of play and that kind of like using of the physicality of the real world to mark moments a little bit.
Yeah. Where were you going to high school? Like, what? Who were these kind of lame preppies that were?
I grew up in a Boston suburb. Great. And then I went to a private school for high school. That was just, it was like a Boston prep school. And yeah, and there was great stuff. I mean, there was like the art department was amazing. I got a great education. There were amazing weirdos within it, but there was also just like an overwhelming, there was a lot of khaki.
And proud.
And like
khaki,
all the cars in the student parking lot were way nicer than the cars in the teacher parking lot, which is, and just like there was just this, it just was kind of lonely.
When you say that, my head immediately goes to, did some of the students treat the instructors as if they were having that conversation, like, my car is fancier than yours, person who's trying to teach me? Or was that just more of like an underlying current that wasn't necessarily showing itself in the respect or lack thereof between teachers and students?
I think it was just like a marker of the kind of place it was. Like, and I think, you know, that was in the late 90s. So it was in the era where you're like, everything's diverse and wonderful. Like, you were not talking about all the kind of structural things. And just, I think it was in this just weird time where, I don't know. I just watched the Woodstock 99 documentary.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
And
oh,
there's just like all,
so,
the, and I was actually there as a 15-year-old. I went to that thing.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And with two friends, with like the one friend who had the learning permit. Anyway, and it just, I think seeing there was like just all this, like, there's just all this rage and there was all this kind of like bridled, but under the surface, I don't know, maybe that's all still there, but I don't know. There was just a weird 90s culture thing that I think I wanted to conform to just check off the like I'm conforming, but then also felt like super lonely and destroyed by it. So it was fine. At the end of the day, it was fine. And it was like not, it just, I just, I think I didn't, it took me a long time to develop like a backbone and a enough of a sense of self to not want to conform to things that like my head knew it didn't want to.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And it strikes me, I mean, just thinking about the Woodstock thing, again, I haven't watched the documentary yet, but I had a sense of it, or the way I think about it now, is kind of this idea of like wanting an experience without having earned it. You know what I mean? Like the sort of Woodstock of the 60s that people are imagining had its own problems, but that there's this sort of entitlement thing at the end of the 90s where it's like, we've done all the work, we're great now.
Yes,
we also deserve a Woodstock, but it's like, oh no, we haven't done the work.
Yeah.
And there, maybe that's the unbridled kind of, or the bridled stuff that's like hiding underneath the surface that is kind of creating that tension and that anger.
Right.
And the like, let's, you know, have a festival in the middle of concrete instead of in a, you know,
that's
in a field.
So beautifully,
and like,
put,
you know,
where, like it wasn't about the work. It wasn't about like pushing for anything. It was about like an entitled entertain me. And a lot of the programming was like ragey. Like,
right. And so music, if you're being kind of told like, we've done the work, everybody should feel good now, in general, being a person who doesn't necessarily feel that way, and needing to kind of tuck that inside, like, that totally makes sense, the idea of losing touch with, like, even your own emotional authenticity, potentially, or feeling it but not knowing how to express it. Did you feel 100%. Did you feel seen or heard by artists? Were there things you would disappear into? Was there music
You
listened to that was like, thank God I have XYZ,
yes,
you know?
Okay, so, like, they're not, but, like, thank God I had Guster.
Guster, sure.
And just like these sensitive men,
not
using their
hands.
They're not even using drumsticks. Like, and there was like that song, 2 Points for Honesty, I would listen to on repeat. Like it seemed to like carry a sadness that I felt was kind of like took my sadness to an equilibrium.
Yeah.
And Liz Phair, like the OG vocal fry and owning it. And like, I think, you know, there was like disappearing into music. Those are the two that just jump out as like the music that I loved. The musician Stephen Kellogg, who was like a Boston scene folk guy, and he had a similar just like tenderness. So
yeah. Okay, we're gonna take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hello, dreamers. This is Evelyn Denton, CEO of the only world-class, fully immersive theme resort, Steeplechase. You know, I've been seeing more and more reports on the blogs that our beloved park simply isn't safe anymore.
Murder them?
I'm gonna wreck it.
They say they got mugged by brigands in the fantasy kingdom of Ephemera, or hijacked by space pirates in Infinitum.
I mean, I could have a knife.
My papa said that I needed to do a crime.
Friends, I'm here to reassure you that it's all part of the show. These criminals were really just overzealous staff trying to make things a little more magical for our guests. We're just as safe as we've always been. This isn't a county fair, dreamers. This is Steeplechase.
The Adventure Zone. Every Thursday at MaximumFun.org.
You said that you were doing some sculpting in college. Were you doing tactile art stuff in private school too?
What? Not really. A little bit. I did some ceramics, and I was like, oh, I could make a thing. Uh-huh. I think getting away from words has always been. I mean, I don't know. I have this ridiculously complex relationship with words because I obviously love them. I want to be a writer. I wrote a book. I love trying to publish essays. I love reading essays. I love audio, which turns out if you want to communicate things in audio journalism, you have to use words. Uh-huh. Or like you can use some other things. And that, I do like that because you can use music and space. But but then I also find them limiting. I'm actually can be incredibly tongue-tied in person or even when I'll track things, like I just ask my questions so slowly, and I don't know. So I think growing up, I got a lot of my validation of my worth through my words. Mm-hmm. Like I do good on papers, and my dad was like into reading what I, you know, there was just a lot of like, you get your value that way. Yeah. And so I think as I've gotten older, just like, I think that in college, which was Swarthmore College, and it was very like cerebral and everyone was really smart and I felt intimidated all the time. And then there was just this kind of like escape into the visual arts and making like ceramics and woodworking, making stools and bowls and just all these, what felt like all these just dumb papers about rhetoric that no one would, like, it just felt so nice to, make a thing.
Absolutely.
And realize even me, they were kind of artless and not that good, but like it was just so satisfying to make a vessel. And
that's a real example of like the process for me was always more satisfying than the end. And that I would have like a little postpartum in part because whatever I had made was not really the sum of the time. You know what I mean? It was like, I wish I could represent like visually in this thing that's not beautiful, how beautiful the experience was internally for me making it.
Yeah.
And so I did this. It's so crazy. But I did this Comic-Con with Lance Henriksen in New Zealand. And we went out to dinner, all of us, this one night. And he was talking about being a ceramicist, being a potter, and how he has this huge, you know, like warehouse space. And he makes he's like, I'm good if I just make and break a pot every day. Like he makes a pot and then he breaks it. It's very Zen, very Buddhist.
But that's
because
enlightened.
He never wants to lose the point of being of making it, and that he never wants to sort of have this endless shelf. I mean, certainly he
that
still
like,
makes a bunch that he doesn't. But you know what I mean? Just like the
to
letting
remind
go.
Himself the process is more.
Yeah.
That is so beautiful.
Which is
I love
so
that.
Which yeah. So I've really carried that with me. And also this all kind of makes sense to me too because of what you were saying about like the texture of the audio that you work on is as close to something tactile for your ears as anything I can think of.
I don't know if you're just being nice, but that makes me really happy.
No, it's really true. I mean, like, short of ASMR, which I don't know. I think I would know by now if I responded
if
positively.
It.
Yeah, if I had it. short of that, like I think that's all there. And so that makes sense. And also the wonder. Like I think that's something that, you know, even just in listening to Terrestrials, like how gung-ho, and I mean that in a totally not sarcastic way, you still are, because I feel exactly this way, of being a part of other people's wonder. And I know you have kids, so obviously you're experiencing it one-on-one or two-on-two or four-on-four there with your family. But really, it feels like, to me, beyond the education, which is clearly that's where the awe and wonder comes from, but it feels always like the conversation, there's this underlying conversation with what you're doing, including Invisibilia has it, Terrestrials has it, of like, isn't this amazing? Like that just sort of underlying, yeah. Like, hey, let's all stay engaged and like, let's make sure we're always finding things that bring us joy and teach us something and let us let go of like the big bad that there seems to always be multiples of in like big picture world today kind of stuff.
Totally. And I think wonder gets like such a bad rap, and I understand it. It's kind of eye rolled into the corner as twee or trivial.
Or like a luxury, which is not.
Or just like kiddie, like, bubbles. Yeah. Like, and I get that. But I think when you think about what is wonder, like, okay, etymologically, the root of wonder is wunder, and it's unknown, which is kind of cool because it's not unknowing. But if you scoot a little over to ah, the root of ah is ege from the
old English.
I can't
believe you know all of this.
Terror. Well, because like,
this is so much a part of your world that you're like, yes,
well,
Janet.
I think
like,
I just think about wonder because actually,
no, for sure.
Because I think I'm trying to be a wonder defender in the world where it can feel really, but it's about terror. And it's about like part of wonder is actually about like feeling small before the world. And I think that like in my book, that kind of ended with this lofty promise of like, if you let go of scientific certainty and categories, you'll get a wilder world where every dandelion is reverberating with possibility. Like it was like this, like, and what, okay, fine. And I, at that, when I was writing it, I was like realizing it, I was very hopped up on it, but what, okay, what does that mean, lady? And so like, I think this series, Terrestrial, is really trying to give six concrete glimpses at a world where nature is not behaving as you expect, or where mm-hmm. an organism is like breaking some rule that you thought applied to nature. And I think like the feeling I get when I see that, as someone who can be prone to like the sad feelings and the feelings that we're stuck and humanity's never going to get out of its messes, is like, maybe that thought is wrong. And maybe, look, if this water particle can get a break from gravity, and this like sterile, this mule that's never supposed to have a child because of chromosomes and absolutes in nature just does, like, or these organisms that are said to be vicious and fight to the death and selfish at all costs, because that's how evolution works, are shown to be incredibly cooperative, actually, really, in the wild, well-documented. What else might we have wrong? And yeah. there's an opening. I think that wonder feeling for me, I'm really thirsty for it. Like I am like the misanthrope depressive in me is like, I need to
Absolutely.
See that I'm wrong.
The same.
Yeah.
I'm the same.
And so that's anyway. So like, I think for me, it's about, yeah, moments of opening and just realizing, yeah, there's so much bad, but we might not have everything right. There might be mysteries. Things might move in different ways. And maybe there's something we can learn from that, or maybe just take relief in the brief realization that we don't understand this place completely.
Sure, absolutely. And also that sort of conversation that I think if you're a person who's gifted with intelligence in your DNA, whether you are blessed with the opportunities and the privilege to fully expand that stuff, that you're having a conversation with your brain, if you're a person who has struggled with depression or anxiety or any number of things, where the whole sort of like who's in charge question, like, am I in charge of my brain? Is my brain in charge of me?
Yeah.
Like what thoughts are productive? What thoughts are necessary? What thoughts are reductive? And
yeah.
So if you're helping to feed people and their brains, because people who have that curiosity are the people who are going to be drawn to your work, you know, sort of saying like, here's a way to engage with this story, or here's a way to engage your brain with something that is going to take it out of the me or the oh god or the, you know, what
totally.
Am I supposed to do here, which I think is this, it's this little like poke at your brain, like, you know what, I'm gonna tell you what to think about right now, and
yeah.
I have some help from some friends,
yeah,
and
let's
you,
go look at this thing
know,
for
yeah.
just 20 minutes and then we
Absolutely.
Can get back to looking at our navel, but just like
Absolutely.
20 minutes, let's look at a bug and like, or just
yeah.
yeah, like, yeah, I think, and yeah, I'm trying to show, well, hopefully also just I am not a very eloquent interviewer, like I ask stuff authentically. I'm not pretending to be dumb. Like I whatever. I just and I think trying to show that like that there are ways to do it. You can just ask people. They don't often. You can just ask people questions and go look at nature. And like there are ways out of the head when it's being cruel to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I also just wanted to quickly shout out, for example, the Guardian episode which is a lot about bugs, right? There's a lot of bug stuff happening.
It's our gross buggy episode.
But it's so good. And it really made me, you know, I was mentioning to Dahlia that I really could have used that because I feel like I had like reruns of 3-2-1 Contact, which meant well, but somehow there were still things that were really scary on them. And
yeah.
I remember there was this night that I was trying to fall asleep and that whatever, there had been a special on bees, but uh-oh, all I could remember was the visual of just a swarm of bees in a hive and not the honey and nothing. And I, every time I closed my eyes, I would just see bees.
Oh,
and I had this like overpowering fear of bees. Part of me could appreciate them, but the other part of me was just so terrified by them.
Yeah.
And it like, by the time, this is a well-known anecdote on my podcast, but by the time I actually got stung by a bee, I had really come to love bees, and I was so sad for the bee. But like, I would have loved to have been sad for the bee as a kid. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I'm so grateful that I got stung by a bee. I was in my 20s when it finally happened, because by then I was like, no, like you didn't need to do that. Like you're not protecting anything. I'm nowhere near your hive. You know, just like to have that relationship to it. And had I had something like Terrestrials, I feel like that journey would have been shorter and would have found me sooner, you know?
Okay, so I didn't like give you new bad images of tsetse flies?
Honestly, you didn't.
Okay.
You didn't.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
Listen, you definitely didn't. You definitely didn't.
Good.
Luckily, like, I think it was, anyway, it's people just, you know what, everybody should just give it a listen and then you can decide how you feel about it. You can check in with yourself about tsetse flies at the end. does that ring true for you? Like, what was your relationship like with kind of the world and science and as a kiddo and going into your teen years where some of that may have kind of further away from you?
That was my reliable happy place. I like that was the soothing of last resort. Like, I think nature was, and I think that's part of why I'm doing this also, like to give to people, but also just to get to spend my own time with my ears filled
nature.
But growing up, I think nature was just reliably clarifying, gentle, helpful. Like there would, you know, they're just, this feels so small, but I just remember, like, I started going hiking and camping. My dad, I have two sisters, but for some reason my dad and I would usually go on like one hiking trip a year. We'd get up really early and like drive to Acadia, and he had his canteen from like when he was a boy, and we'd pack snacks and like whatever, and it was always just fun. And I just remember like the feeling of being on a hike and you're on a trail, but just this simple, weird thrill of like, I could walk off the trail. I could walk through those bushes and I guess like maybe leave no trace. You probably shouldn't, but, but just the weird thrill of like, just like kind of, I don't know, in a growing up, like where there's rules and there's school and there's times, and then there's all these social rules that I think I perceived vividly, like was always afraid of, you know, doing the wrong thing. I think there's just nature and not like just the feeling of being out among other organisms who just aren't judging you.
Yeah.
Was
fantastic.
And so I think I was always really afraid of snakes, but other than that, like bugs were fine, dirt. Like I just loved, I don't know. I just loved it. And I think that has been like one of the only constants through my whole life.
Yeah, I totally get it. I feel the same way. And it's the way you describe that. It's a feeling that I feel like I kind of chase from my childhood in not an unhealthy way, which is because it's generally found in nature, which is that sort of secret hideout feeling, which is the feeling of like, where is this moment where I'm getting a little adrenaline rush, not because I'm doing anything wrong, but just because there's a sense of like a secret between me and nature in some way.
Totally.
And that's such a, I mean, talk about a natural high, like it's such a cliche, but it is this sort of feeling of like, and if you can find that and like make room for that, it does have that same kind of thrill as like, you know, like look behind here, like I built this little fort and like no one knows it's here. And maybe everyone knows it's there, but in your mind, you know, no one knows it's there.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of special place. And however that Like, the idea of it feeling kind of wild and mysterious, but also having a safety to it is like, I mean, to me, that's like Carl Sagan 101.
Yeah.
You know, is the sort of sense of like, and it's been continued through other things. But as a kid, you know, I very much relate to what you're saying about public radio and to a certain degree PBS, because, you know, my parents would watch stuff that was like shot in, on a cheap soundstage in a British studio. And it has like very, you know, those cameras where you're what camera is this? Like, this looks so bad. Everyone looks shiny.
Right.
This audio sounds tinny from far away. And then Cosmos comes on and you're like, what? Hold on, what?
Yeah.
Where am I? And again, that sense of wonder, like there's a person who knows how to capture wonder in science, you know, and among that, many others. But
the, oh yeah, I mean that. Yeah, the feeling of the little spot is so true. I am going to forget the name of this researcher, but it was some dude in the 70s. Okay, so we, like on Invisibilia, we did a piece about fear. And we talked about this guy who studied kids the way that like, oh my God, this is how tired. Oh, Diane Fossey studied like apes. And, and so he just went into like small towns, I think maybe in Vermont, and like watched how kids played like in the woods and filmed them.
Yes.
And then he, one of the thing we talked about was like how over 30 years, the radius that kids move got so small and crime didn't change, but like parents feared it. It's just
right.
like, so that's what
episode,
we talked about, blah, blah, blah. But then there was this side thing where we watched a bunch of his videos and like read his papers. And the thing he noticed was like, one of the main things kids do when parents aren't looking at a kind of certain age, I forget exactly, but probably in the 7 to 10, is they just like go into hidden spots and make forts and structures. They just like make little worlds that are theirs and have, and that they like, they make safe and they make some kind of structure and they like decorate, they make it theirs.
Feels kind of ceremonial.
Yeah. And I loved just like seeing it outlined that like that is one of the most primal ways we play when given the space to do it. And like that you just, you want to make your own little world and you want to structure it and decorate it and invite the people in you want and have little, and I just, I think like as humans, that like as kids, but just as humans, we're looking for like, for little safe places that have some mischief and have their own little culture and magic in them. And
absolutely.
Oh,
it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Since the dawn of time, man has dreamed of bringing life back from the dead. From Orpheus and Eurydice to Frankenstein's monster, resurrection has long been merely the stuff of myth, fiction, and fairy tale. Until now.
Actually, we still can't bring people back from the dead. That would be crazy, but the Dead Pilot Society podcast has found a way to resurrect great dead comedy pilots from Hollywood's finest writers. Every month, Dead Pilot Society brings you a reading of a comedy pilot that was sold and developed but never produced, performed by the funniest actors from film and television. How does Dead Pilot Society achieve this miracle? The answer can only be found at MaximumFun.org.
Okay, so do you know, did you ever play MASH, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, and House? Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're going to do some tailored for you in this conversation to a certain degree MASH categories.
I'm so excited. I'm getting ASMR. I swear. Like, I get light ASMR. There's just a few things that do it, and it's being read aloud to, apparently playing MASH.
Amazing.
And like, the few times I go to the tailor
gives
me.
I love it.
Anyway, okay, good. Okay. We'll play.
It's so
ready.
Funny. I was just thinking, I was like falling asleep, dreaming about having something like a customized suit made, going like, I still have never done that. And then I was like, why am I thinking about this?
Bucket
Maybe
list.
That's
get
why.
A suit. I believe in you. I think you can get a suit made in your
life. I gotta get a suit. Okay. First category, let's do three places in the world that we're going to give you an extra room in your house and you can open the door. And you're going to go into a natural environment for three places in the world that is like, that's it. It's sort of your secret place. But it's like, oh, suddenly you're at a lake in New Zealand, or suddenly you're in the forest in Oregon. And so it's this magical door in your house that takes you to three secret, quote unquote, Lulu secret places, natural places in the world.
Okay. Number one, Wintergreen Point, a peninsula in the Adirondacks off the trail.
Great.
And it's like, it's on this lake and you feel like a queen and the whole lake is yours. And it's so cool. Okay.
Love
summer.
It.
Summer. I don't want to, I have no interest in being there in the winter. Okay. number two, Tobacco Bay in Bermuda.
Okay.
Which is just this like gorgeous cove, and the name makes it sound like maybe there's going to be cigarette butts in the water, but they're not.
We all know you only smoke incense, so it doesn't
only
matter.
Only smoke incense. that is where I like knew, I just knew I wanted to marry the woman who is now my wife. And then just somewhere in like the Pacific Northwest. I don't even know it well, but I'd love some redwoods and some like steamy pine-scented eucalyptus-y air.
Yes.
And like trees that are too big to hug.
Oh,
can't get you can hug them, but you can't get your arms around them.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Love it. Love it. This is like, speaking of things that are just spoiling me, this is why I love doing this. Okay. Next one. Let's do three people from any period of time, from any field, from any realm, but three people that you would love to collaborate on something with. And probably for whatever reason, I mean, perhaps it is because they are no longer alive, but like you could really shoot for the unattainable here because this is our wish fulfillment. Like three people that you would love to, and you don't even have to know what it is you'd collaborate on, but just three people from any time in history, any time that you'd love to do something with.
Okay. Okay, there was an unnamed lady alchemist. No, she has a name. I'm forgetting it, but I don't know. There's this lady alchemist from the 1500s who was like possibly actually magic.
Amazing.
Sorry, I forget her name. She'll probably be cool with that. She's like, it's okay. It's not
names,
about this.
It's okay, not about names.
Okay, it's just fresh in my head right now, and she's living, and she's Latif Nasser's wife, and she made the show Glow. And I just think she gets like female friendships and the belonging that can be found in found family, but also utter silliness. Like,
yes,
so smart and so dumb. So Carly Mensch. And then like, let me think visual. Okay, whoever like made the laser light shows of the 90s in science museums and like first real, whoever did the Pink Floyd laser light show.
Oh, yes.
I would like to work with them on something for today.
I could not agree and love like, that more.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Those are my things.
Fantastic. Okay. Now I'm coming up with like ill-formed sort of nebulous ideas here because I'm so stimulated by your brain. But how about like amusement park? It could be a small amusement park, but like amusement park with some sort of science theme that you haven't seen or, you know, don't know about, but like, what could we create rides about and sort of like
black
some sort
hole,
of
black great. Holes, that black hole slide.
Great, 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 great.
Okay. Like the nerve in the giraffe's neck, which makes no sense. Do you know this thing? So like, this is one way that people argue that evolution defined things and not God. So it's kind of,
oh, this is
rude,
a bad time for me to say. I actually am a creationist. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, but like, so like you never know. No, but like, end. Whatever. To all systems
know.
Of belief, like
sure,
truly,
sure.
all ways
sure,
of knowing. Sure. But there's this nerve that instead of just going from the brain to the eye, again, probably getting this wrong, but ballparky,
right. like,
it goes like
travel.
All the way down and then all the way back up.
Yes.
And so that would be this like Ferris wheel scrambler, but like, I don't know,
oh
the giraffe's
God.
Neck. Like,
you are
evolution
like
park?
Justifying every stupid idea I have right now for a category.
But that actually just sounds aggressive. I'm stealing this from Alan, the songbud, who sings on the podcast and is just genius. He's my friend. He wasn't in radio. He's just like had another job with a past as a punk musician and he's a genius. And
love
he
it.
Makes the they are so special.
The song
but
are
he
wonderful.
Got very interested in the idea of recursive islands, which are islands. Okay, so like you have an island.
Okay.
And in the island there's like a little pond, and in the pond there's an island, and in that island there's a pond, and in the pond there's another island. So
okay.
It would be like the recursive island fractal.
Yeah.
Lazy river, but it would be like tropical. So like also I have a frozen drink.
That is
recursively forever.
Marvelous.
Relaxoland. Infinite fractal relaxoland.
I wish I had room to write infinite fractal relaxoland. I really hope that we don't forget it. We can always listen to this episode if we need to remember.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Listen, this is a romance category. That's what exists in MASH. Whatever you want to do with it. Fictional characters.
So like my wife. Okay, but
in this alternate universe.
Yes.
She's also got something wonderful going on.
With the Rock. No, the Rock is her one.
With the Rock.
That's who she's allowed.
We're going to hand her over to the Rock and vice versa.
With the Rock.
She's going to do whatever she wants there.
They're going to make their pebble.
This is a world. They're going to make their pebble. And you are going to just have, you know, it could be short term or long term. I'm not, you know, no judgment here. Whatever you want. Sexy times, romance, long term companionship. Three people, whether they exist in real life or not, from any era, any book, any movie, any cartoon, any video game, anything.
Okay. Ooh, or books. Okay. Well, like the first one that jumped forward because like our forces form us. So like Anthony Kiedis.
Great.
I mean, he was at Woodstock 99.
I was about to say,
like, you know, kind of part of the culture that's like forming that. But just like Anthony Kiedis, Under the Bridge Downtown, long hair, shirtless era.
Okay. Yeah.
Why is that like the only person I can think of right now?
Listen, he was very powerful. If there ever was a person who exuded pheromones somehow through like just being on in a video, he did.
Yep. Okay. Then we've also got Miss Rumphius.
Okay.
So Miss Rumphius is a children's book, and she's this like ambiguously single woman who travel like who the Lupine Lady. She just lives by the sea in a really cute house, and she plants flowers and she like adventures and gets cozy and like has friends. But beautiful. I think she would be a good lover.
I love that, and for some reason
I could be cozy with her by the sea.
That sounds so good. And I got slammed with the crush I had on Meg's mom in A Wrinkle in Time in that book.
Really?
So hard when you said that. All of a sudden I was like, oh,
there it is. Yeah. Okay. So Miss Rumphius.
Great.
Oh, and
Ms.
then my
Rumphius.
Last one, which I don't remember the character's name, but did you read the book Pisces, which is about a woman who falls in love with a merman?
No.
But it's very like earthly.
Should I?
Yeah, it's great.
Great.
It's like fun trash. Okay. The merman in that is... He's very earthly. Like, it's not fairy tale. It's like the woman has to, like, bring him in a wagon to, like, get him out of the sea. But he had something going on. So the merman.
That totally makes sense.
From Pisces.
Beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Next one. Three skills that we are going to sort of give you Matrix style where you wake up tomorrow and you're like, I know kung fu.
Oh. Okay. Surfing. I am an incredible surfer. Number one. Absolutely
wonderful.
Great at it. I would love to be good at the guitar. I would love to play the guitar. My hands have tried. I am musically dyslexic. I played the saxophone for 12 years. Can't make it happen. I love music. Anyway, play the guitar, surf. And these are all like things that if I was less klutzy, I could like these. You don't need magic, but I would need magic.
Understood.
And then, actually kind of kung fu parkour. That's the other thing.
I would love
to like flip. I really would love to just flip off buildings and like,
So that's
what I choose. Should I have
100%.
Chosen like things that were like good for society?
No, I mean, that's that. This is,
okay.
this is, we're, this
I would
is
just
dessert.
Like,
we're eating dessert right now.
I want skills.
So you, yeah.
Okay.
And speaking of dessert, by the way, three foods that in this reality, perhaps you're allergic to or you feel that they're ecologically irresponsible or just you wish that you could still eat a bunch of sugar and not feel sick afterwards. In this world, we're removing all of that. There are zero ramifications. If you want a burger, it's not really a cow, like, et cetera, et cetera. Or it could also be like this beautiful, you know, sandwich you had this one time on a trip. And you're like, why did that just stick with me? And why can't I ever have it again?
Ooh.
So this is food wish fulfillment. Three foods we're going to give you with zero ramifications.
Fried chicken from the supermarket in Kauai, where I went to on my honeymoon.
Kauai.
And then just like all the buttered popcorn from the movies.
Ugh.
I guess I'm a savory person. I know that.
That's great.
And then like a pizza from Naples.
Oh, great, great, great. Yes, indeed.
The savories.
Okay, almost done. I'm not going to keep you too much longer. This next category, three films that you can jump into. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in the space with the characters in that world whenever you want.
Oh, my God. I love that question. Okay. My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh, yes.
Hook.
Great.
It's just like those like the food fight, and then it's just like cake on an island. Okay.
Yeah, it makes me very happy to know that I do a podcast with Rufio now through because of Avatar. So if you want me to introduce you to Rufio, let me know.
Just tell him like I appreciate him.
I will.
And then okay, weirdly, the station agent. And like just that small town. And what's that actress's name? Her house on the dock.
Yeah. Patricia Clarkson.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so what a dream. Yeah. That's wonderful. I need to watch that movie again.
That movie is so great.
It's so good. It's so good.
Doesn't move how you think it is. But And then it's just great. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Final one. Let's do three musicians. We're going to... what they're going to do for you is create a soundtrack somehow intuitively. They're going to create a kind of ongoing soundtrack for your life. So there can be joy, there can be contemplation, whatever you want that to sound like or look like. But three, it could be composer, singer, songwriter, straight up bands, three musicians that you would like to create this kind of organic Lulu Miller soundtrack.
Okay. I mean, obviously Liz Phair.
Great.
Have to.
Great.
And then I'm just trying to remember his name. It's like a blue. It's like this. Chuck Johnson.
Chuck Johnson. Great.
And Chuck Johnson. Oh, OK. I have a tie, but I'm going to break it. I'm thinking either Dark Side or Typhoon. I think Typhoon. They would like bring their like whole symphonic so much, but then they'd also be able to go really quiet. And then a man singing on falsetto who has like almost touched death. Because of his health scares, which I think informed his done. Okay, Typhoon.
Beautiful.
Typhoon.
Okay, beautiful. All right. Final thing. Give me a word to help describe your sort of general mood when you woke up this morning.
Oh, this morning. Okay. Cozy. Just one word.
Yeah.
Cozy.
Wonderful. Okay. I'm going to do this very scientific calculation to get us to each thing you get from your 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH world.
Yes.
Will you please remind people about Trestrials, anything else that you would like them to check out, where they can find you, all that good stuff. In other words, vamp.
Okay, vamp. I'll vamp. yes. Well, no, here's my pitch for Trestrials. It is definitely for kids, but it's also secretly for real for adults. And I guess... if you can get over the barrier of subscribing to the Radiolab for Kids feed to get there, which I think you can. It's all free.
Absolutely can and should.
Okay. Love it. Love the encouragement. It's just a little 20-minute nature walk with your pal. We have 6 episodes that we've worked a whole year on. We scoured like hundreds of stories to get to the best ones and to the most fun storytellers and kind of lushed the whole thing up with space and sound design. And I would love if you try. I've just given all my vamping is going to Terrestrials. I think this is the thing I have ever made that I'm most excited about.
I think you could feel that in the episodes and at least what I've heard. Because only 2 are out, right? It just launched on the 22nd.
4 more coming. We're brand new.
Early adopter, everybody. Get in there. Fall in love with it. I can speak to the songs being adorable and wonderful and putting a smile on your face. And you're also learning. So get into it. I do have your MASH results.
Okay. What's my alternate world?
Pretty good. Pretty good about it.
This is such a nice process. Like, just dream the world you want. What a healthy exercise.
Great.
I love
it. It's just it really puts a little spring in my step when each time I finish an episode. Okay. I got a lot to tell you about. I'm feeling real good about it. One thing that I guess I didn't really do because I was so preoccupied with the secret place with the door for your room is I actually didn't pick... like a place for you to have your mansion, apartment, shack,
that's
or house.
Okay. I'm okay.
So
with
I think
that.
Maybe you have an apartment in My Neighbor Totoro.
Okay, perfect.
Like, I think that's a place you can go, and then you have your own place you can call home while you're there.
Okay,
so
love
you can definitely do that whenever you want. You're going to have to be splitting your time between a lot of different places because you can go into that movie where you have a charming apartment, but you were also very busy doing a ton of surfing.
Okay.
So you are. Very, very busy doing surfing. Now, there's a lot of different places you could surf. There may be a scenario in which, because the Pacific Northwest is very magical in that there are redwoods and then, you know, not so far away, there's like surf crashing into the rocks. We'll assume it's safe because you have a door that opens up right into this just beautiful, majestic, wonderful forest where the redwoods create their own climate. I'm so blown away by redwoods. Cannot say enough good things about them. So you're going, it's almost like getting the island in island because it's like climate within climate within climate. It's like the redwoods are building a world inside a world. Trees are growing on redwood branches. It's so amazing. So
wait, I love it. Am I sometimes surfing the mist? Is this what you're saying?
You are sometimes surfing
it's
the mist.
So thick, I can surf the mist. So basically,
yes.
I can fly. Okay,
yes,
loving it.
You
okay.
can. Yes,
okay.
you can.
Okay.
That, by the way, it does burn some calories. You're going to want some of that delicious pizza straight from Naples.
Yes.
Going yes. to just treasure that. Let me tell you who I can imagine doing all of these things with you.
Yes.
Anthony Kiedis.
Yes.
You know he wants to surf some trees and eat some pizza with you. Are you kidding
does.
Me?
He does. He does. We're going to have a great time.
But, you know, you're also
and, like,
busy
we both,
because,
maybe oh, yeah. he has, does he have the long hair back? Can we, because I kind
yeah,
of have, like, the
has,
same hair
he has
as
the
him,
hair.
You know?
Yeah, he has
and
the hair.
We both, like, headbang.
100%. 100%. I say try to get him to put on a shirt. Just try
okay.
to get him to put on
I'm
a shirt.
Fail.
It ain't
going to
happen. You also are going to be collaborating with the wonderful Carly Minch on something
yes.
extraordinary, which, by the way, could absolutely happen. Maybe we're willing that into happening right now. Whether or not she wants it to be affiliated with the rad black hole slide kind mm-hmm. of themed science world, astronomy, magic, which I think is my favorite of the things that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I love that idea. Love, love, love the idea of the black hole slide. So
yes.
that's also happening. That's a gift you're
Amazing.
Giving to the world.
Amazing.
And that leaves us with the soundtrack that's going to be accompanying all of this fabulousness, all of the ins and outs of this alternate universe provided by the one and only Liz Phair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well okay.
played.
I just, what a like, lovely. I'm like going to just be able to fall asleep tonight
yeah.
surfing the redwood mist with Anthony
right.
Kiedis and like
That's
Carly's
right.
waiting for me for like our creative project and
yeah.
Liz Phair is just like in a hole in the tree like rocking out.
Everything feeds into everything else. You're better at all of these things
wow.
because you're being stimulated by the other things. You know what I mean? It's this like wonderful ecosystem of creativity and energy I feel happening.
I am so authentically relaxed right now and my scalp is like magic. Like there are so many sparkles. It's like tight, loose, sparkle, sparkle, sparkle.
I'm so
anyway,
happy.
Wow.
I'm
wow.
so happy to hear it.
That
Will
was
Miller.
Good.
What a bucket list moment for me. I'm so glad we got to do this together.
Oh, you are so sweet, Janet.
Yeah,
this
I hope we
so
get to
fun.
Do something else and see each other in real life and all of that.
Thanks for
because,
just like
yeah.
exploring imagination
yes.
and nerdery with like so much heart. This is so much fun. Thank you.
My pleasure. Couldn't do without it, just like you couldn't do without the stuff you're making. So from
yeah.
one to another, thank you. And everybody, check out Terrestrials. Why am I saying that? You already have. You already press pause. You already subscribed. And you're already in love with it. So, well, I have nothing to worry about. Lulu, thank you again. Everybody Thanks. Else, I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Thanks so much. This was so much fun.
The show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.